South Africa's rugby mad, and we also have a population that loves to run. And of course, we all know about our security here in this country, being one of the areas that we're the best in the world at for unfortunate reasons. Rory Steyn is the man who's going to be guiding us through the first two of those issues, but his business is in security, and we'll find out how that makes him a useful person to be talking to about sport. Well, Rory, you have given us a fascinating fireside chat at a previous BizNews conference, and indeed you're going to be doing so again in March next year. I'm really looking forward to that. Thank you for agreeing. But I guess, before we start and tell people what we're going to achieve in these conversations that we're going to be having every week, is just to get a little bit of background from your perspective. Your company's called NSA Global Security Consultants, but you're best known for the role that you played as the chief bodyguard to Nelson Mandela while he was president of South Africa, which has got to be like one of the most responsible positions looking back on the planet. And from there, you moved into the private sector. So let's not dwell too much. There's plenty of videos and things about your time with Madiba. But your private sector life, the 22 years that you co-founded NSA. Just tell us about the idea there and what it is that you specialize in, and then that'll be a good segue into what our conversation is going to be about.
Certainly. Well, first of all, thank you for having me again on BizNews. I'm very proud to be a member of your tribe. Alec made such good connections over the years, both at the live conferences, but also on the WhatsApp groups. And it's a really wonderful tribe to be a part of. Yeah. So the five years that I served Madiba, and it was literally from day one till day whatever it was, because it was the 10th of May that he was inaugurated. He finished in his term of office on the 16th of June, and on the 17th of June, I went in and resigned from the police and got on a plane that night and flew to England. Ali Bacha had sent me there because England were hosting the 1999 Cricket World Cup. The ICC had told him that we would get the 2003 World Cup as it transpired, and he didn't have a head of security, and he had asked me even while I was still serving the president, and off I went. So pub quiz, if you ask me in any quiz or Trivial Pursuit, when did Klusner and Donald mess up that run out in the semi-final? It was the 17th of June 1999, because I was standing at Otamba International about to board my flight. So, yeah, and then I left. As I said, I started NSA with my late business partner, Bob Nichols. Why NSA? Well, we didn't have any initiative, so we called it Nichols, Steyn & Associates. And the market just took that as NSA. And then we got a third shareholder, being a chartered accountant from Mumbai, and called ourselves NSA Global. We also have a local office, NSA South Africa, NSA Security Consultant South Africa. So that's really how it happened, Alec. And I, at the time, didn't know whether I should go into sports marketing. It was an embryonic industry at the time, but all I knew was policing. And there I got the best of both worlds. So I got to do security and sport. Just very, very privileged.
I was privileged to meet the late Bob Nichols here in Hermanus. As it happened, it was 2 years ago today, actually, that I was invited to a gathering, and he was at the same table, and I spent an hour and a little more just chatting with him. What an amazing character. And I guess you were the reason why we had that conversation, because you know what it's like when you're with people who and you're in security. Oh, do you know Rory Steyn? Well, actually, he's my partner. And what he was telling me, and I'm not going to repeat it because I don't know how much of it is off the record and secret stuff, but jeepers, you guys really operate at the very, very highest level of VIP protection.
Yeah, and sports security. You know, we did all the team security for the first 8 years of the IPL, when the IPL was nothing like the behemoth it is today. And it was fun, man. You know, we got our hands dirty, and we kind of figured it out as we went along. And Yeah, it's a source of pride today. You know, Alec, I've been privileged to work at 6 Olympic Games. I attended the 7th one now recently in Paris, only as a spectator. I've done Rugby World Cups, Cricket World Cups, too many to mention, and 2 FIFA World Cups, our own in 2010 and then Brazil in 2014. So, yeah, I mean, it's taken us to, Bob and I were together actually as guests at the Monaco Grand Prix. It's taken us all around the world to the most glamorous and most high-profile events, the Oscars, as you know. It's just been an extraordinary journey, he and I, for 24 years that we were business partners, yeah.
From your perspective, though, when you are in that role, you see behind the curtain. And I think that's where your value comes in as a commentator. It's a little bit like Neil de Beer talking about politics. He understands politics because he was behind the curtain. Same thing with Rob Herzog. He's a billionaire who knows all the players, and he's seen behind the curtain, a place that us, the rest of us, just don't get to. And I don't know how much of that you're going to be able to share with us, but at least it will be informing your decisions, no doubt.
I'll always tell you if I can't say anything that, you know, for whatever reason, Alec, but otherwise I'm an open book. I have, there are no sacred cows with me. You can ask me anything. And if for any reason I can't, I'll tell you. Yeah.
So we're going to start with rugby. And just to add to your other credentials, your son is Kyle Steyn. Tell us about Kyle Steyn very briefly. I see you wearing his rugby clubs.
Yeah, because we're going to talk about the URC and the European rugby in a second. So I decided I'll mail my colors to the mast because there's plenty of chirpers there on that BizNews sports group. And it's always a good idea to remind the Bulls supporters that they need to settle down. You know, that Glasgow came here having beaten the Stormers in Glasgow, beaten Munster away. Then they came here to the Highveld and out-bulled the Bulls. So, yeah, I'm a proud Glasgow Warriors supporter. Yeah, so Kyle's our eldest of 3 boys, and he gets to be a Glasgow Warrior and a Scotland international because I married well, Alec. I married a girl who was born in Scotland, in Glasgow, Jill, and the heritage comes through her. So, yeah, we're both equally proud of Kyle's achievements, as we are of our other 2 boys, yeah.
Okay, and you clearly, if it's your son, you follow his every move and also we'll be getting insights into what's going on there. The other South African connection of, well, I mean, there are a few South African connections at the Glasgow Warriors. Maybe you can take us through them.
Yeah, so there's Henko Venter, who played on Friday night against the Scarlets, had a great game. There's a new tight head prop called Patrick Schickeling that's in there. Oli Kebbel has just left to go to Ajax in France. Oli Kebbel was there with Kyle. Sintu Manjezi was also with Kyle in Griquas as well as at Glasgow Warriors, and now Sintu is back at the Bulls. And there's one other Nathan Macbeth, a young Monas boy. Nathan Macbeth could hardly speak a word of English. Can you believe it with a name like that? But a really, really solid loose-head prop and a guy who's going to go from strength to strength, I've no doubt. I'm looking for big things from him this season. And then there's JP Dupreer, the big lock forward. You know, people often say, can't we find a few South African locks with Scottish heritage? Well, JP doesn't have Scottish heritage, but he'll qualify in a year or two by dint of playing for Glasgow for 5 years. So that's the South Africa contingent at Glasgow Warriors. But let us not forget that...
You've told us a lot about the players, but there's somebody even more important from a broader perspective.
Indeed. And his name is Franco Smith. And, you know, there's been a lot said just recently because we had the World Rugby Awards and we had Coach of the Year and all of that stuff. And this, you know, the elephant in the room was Russie, as the meme said. But Franco Smith is, I promise you, a coach in the Russie mold. He is extraordinary. And what he's done with those Glasgow Warriors is nothing short of miraculous. He's only been there 2 years. In the first year, they lost in the final of the European Rugby Challenge to Toulon, a huge French side with all the palmares that you can imagine. And then they won the URC in the following season. So he's only into his 3rd season, and they've played in 2 finals. You know, previously Glasgow had only played in 1 final in 2018, which was Kyle's first year over there. They lost that to Leinster at Celtic Park in Glasgow, and the other one they won in 2015. So, you know, 2 seasons, 2 finals is great. And Franco is right up there with the top coaches. The way he thinks, the way he allows his coaching staff and his players to develop as people, you know, within the framework that he set a la Gary Kirsten, with the Indian team when they won the World Cup. He's going places. A wonderful guy. Wonderful coach.
Where does he come from?
Well, he comes from Grey College in Bloem. Coached Shimlers. Coached Free State. Was a Springbok. Played with Ruthie in the Springbok team of that that era, kind of late 90s, early 2000s. And then he went to play rugby in Italy. He just wanted to broaden his horizons. And I must arrange that you get him on Biz News Sport to interview him. He's got an extraordinary story. So that he even says now that that English is only his third language. Italian is his second language because he went and played there. He coached there. And then he became the director of rugby for the Italian Rugby Federation. And so the performances that you're seeing now out of Italy, beating Wales in the Six Nations and being competitive, almost beating France this year, in their friendly internationals, is because of the pipeline that Franco Smith put in place there 4 to 5 years ago. There was no pipeline. There were two professional clubs, Benetton and Zebre, and little else. And Franco put that pipeline in place. And then from that director of rugby position, he interviewed for and was appointed as Glasgow Warriors coach. So he's got proper rugby credentials. And I love the guy. He's just a great bloke, but he's a very, very astute coach with a great rugby brain, like his fellow Free Stater, Ruthie Erastus.
And you mentioned Grey College.
Yes. Yeah, Franco went to school there.
I remember that.
Yeah, no, he went to school there.
I remember the from school rugby, from watching that, Grey College has always been a huge force in school rugby in South Africa.
Yeah.
Does it remain? Is it still as good?
It is. Interesting that you say that, Alec, and it's perhaps a conversation for another day, but I was having, I had a braai yesterday with a former Grey College pupil, a literal walking rugby encyclopedia, and he's very concerned. He doesn't think that it can endure, it can sustain itself over the next 10 years purely because so many people, you know, Bloemfontein doesn't have the job market and the economy of the Free State, thanks Ace Magashule, is just not going to sustain it. So parents are moving to the Cape, they're sending their kids to the rugby schools down there. He's very concerned, and it was like, what? An eye-opener for me, because to me, Grey College is iconic.
It's an interesting point, and again, for a conversation for another day. My prep school was Merkeston, and Merkeston was always the feeder school to Maritzburg College. And it was Maritzburg College was always a great rugby school. It's still okay, but the headmaster of Merkeston, who passed away a couple of years ago, took me on a day's tour around my old school. And he said, one of the big problems with the boys is that they're still producing excellent rugby players at Merkeston. But Hilton, Makala, Sachs, Bishops, all come Double. Calling when these kids are about 10 years old. So as a consequence, the flow that you used to have, which produced people like Butch James and many others.
Joel Stransky.
Peter Grant.
Yeah.
I don't think Joel Stransky came
from
Merkeston. But,
Maritzburg College.
Are you sure?
Yeah, 100%.
He was Maritzburg College.
Yeah.
But I think he went to Rondebosch
as a prep school. Okay.
Of course, Jesse.
Jesse Creel's Maritzburg College, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, Merkeston, Maritzburg College. So, but that train is no longer there. And the point you make about Grey College would suggest that as well. Because if your parents have moved away, it might be changing things. So maybe the old boys of Grey College should be dipping their hands
in
their pockets there. And,
yeah.
The alumni. We're going to be talking about the comrades later because that's also something where the alumni have stepped in. But let's look at rugby now and what happens this week, this huge tournament, the rugby's equivalent of the European Cup, where Liverpool seem to be blowing everybody away at the moment, Real Madrid, Barcelona. You could ask most people around the world who have any interest in sport, and they know all about the European Cup. But when you ask South Africans about the greatest rugby competition for clubs, they're not kind of there yet. They might have heard vaguely there was a Heineken Cup, but now it's a South African company actually that's sponsoring it through Investec.
Yes.
Well, we claim them even though they're big in London too.
Yeah, so that hasn't
just
helped.
Just explain how
absolutely, Alec. I'd be glad to. But it hasn't helped that right at while South Africans are grappling with how does the URC fit into European rugby, they went and renamed the Investec Cup used to be the Heineken Cup. So I'll explain all of that. So the the United Rugby Championship that our four top franchises play in used to be called the Pro 14. And at the Pro 14 level, it had the Cheetahs and the Southern Kings playing in it. So they then fell out when we withdrew from Super Rugby. So the Bulls, Stormers, Lions, and Sharks went to the Pro 14, and it became the URC. And it's played. There are 16 teams in that championship, Alec, and they are divided into four pools. Very simply, four Irish teams, four Welsh teams, four South African teams, and then the fourth pool is comprised of the two Scottish and the two Italian professional franchises. So in those four pools, you play home and away. So you play your derbies. And as you can see from URC spectator attendance, the derbies are still the big crowd pullers for South African sides. You know, you get 40,000 when the Bulls play in Cape Town. And then you play home and away within your pool of four. Then you play home or away against the other 12 teams in those 16. So, for example, let's look at Glasgow Warriors, since I'm wearing the shirt. They've already played the Sharks and the Stormers in South Africa this year. When they play the Bulls and the Lions, it'll be at Scotstoun in Glasgow. So the Lions and the Bulls will come there this year, and they'll switch it next year. Next year, the Stormers and the Sharks will go there, and they'll come here to play the Bulls and the Lions. So then you play out that championship in those four pools with that home and away and home or away, and then you arrive at the top eight of those 16 teams. And they simply play quarterfinal, semi-final, final. So one plays eight, two plays seven, and so on. And then you play a final. In addition to that, those top eight teams that finish on the log of the URC go to Europe. The top four teams go to what's now called the Investec Challenge, which is the top tier of Europe. And I'll come to who else plays in there. And the bottom four teams of positions 5 to 8 in the URC play in the European Challenge Cup. That's the tournament that the Sharks are the defending champions of. And Glasgow played and lost to Toulon in the previous season's version of the. So just like you have in soccer, you've got the Champions League, and then you've got the Europa Cup. It's the same thing. You've got a top tier and a bottom tier. So in the top tier, who plays there, or actually in both, who plays in Europe with those eight URC teams? Very simply, all of the French teams. The French league is called the top 14. They have 14 French teams. No other teams play in that league. Only 14 French teams. And similarly, the Gallagher Premiership, the England Championship, is 12 teams. It used to be 16. Three of them, as we know, went bankrupt. And I'm not sure what happened to the fourth. I think it got relegated. So they have 12 teams. So now you take 12 Pommy teams, 14 French teams, and you take the top eight of the URC and you throw them into these two leagues. And they play off for the top prize in European rugby is now called the Investec Champions Cup. And the lower league is the European Champions Cup. So that's how it works. And South Africans, we should have our minds around the URC now because we're into season four. But the European thing was a little difficult and, as I say, muddied a bit by the fact that they changed the name. So that's where we are. But it's huge, you know, Alec. And there are fears that because of the quality of rugby being produced, I mean, England are not allowed to pick anybody to play for England in the Six Nations or any other representative fixture unless they play their rugby domestically in the Gallagher Premiership. And the French do the same. So the top 14 is easily the most valuable league. They have three professional divisions in French rugby, and there's more than enough money there. Elsewhere, not so much. So I think we need Rob Herzog. He's already offered his assistance to us on the Comrades, and I will be calling on that. So I think we need some thinking there. Now there's speculation about, you know, who these people are putting up money to counter the offer to SARU. So rugby is struggling a little bit with funding, but we've still got a glorious product, as you say. And in South Africa, we're not struggling. You know, we're the ones that are bringing the ability to draw greater TV and advertising revenue because we're playing in the URC. So long may that continue, Alec.
It's an interesting point there about the French and the English, which is what Do the New Zealanders also do that? Or you have to play in a...
The New Zealanders do the same.
And we used to when we were getting thumped all the time. And then we changed our approach.
Correct.
And now we're not getting thumped anymore, which is... But it doesn't... I can understand those rugby guys thinking that way. But imagine if you had a football team in the World Cup and you couldn't... Brazil could only pick from the domestic league, or... France would only pick from the, or England, put it that way. You'd have no Jude Bellingham and many of the great players who play elsewhere. It just doesn't make sense. Anyway, in time, if Rossi keeps winning, perhaps the French, the English, and the Kiwis will change their minds on who they can pick.
Well, I think you're right. And I think, like most things, Rossi shows the way. So I don't think it's going to be long before New Zealand open up and say that their players that are playing in Japan and elsewhere in the world, in France, earning the proper money that's in France, will be able to play. I mean, they've already lost. They've just lost Beauden Barrett. He's going to, you know, he's going to play in France. I think he's going to Toulouse. Is he going to Toulouse? He's going to one of the top outfits in France. And England are going to be forced to do the same because, you know, the RFU are messing it up. We've just seen this ridiculous payout of £1.1 million to their chief executive, hitting targets that he didn't actually hit. They to me the figures. Go and have a look at that YouTube channel where the egg chasers guy unpacks that. It's absolutely ludicrous. You know, England have only won 47% of their fixtures, but because their women are good, they combined the two and arrived at a 75% win rate and paid the guy a bonus. I mean, it's as fraudulent as, you know, the other kind of stuff that Rob was talking about on your channel
crazy,
the other day.
Crazy. Yeah, the egg chaser is quite a if anyone who hasn't watched him yet needs to catch that. You just put Egg Chaser on YouTube, and he's been to South Africa, and I love the stuff that he did when he was here. But getting back to France, with horse racing, French horse racing is very strong because they've structured it in such a way. They don't allow bookies. Everything has to go through the tote, and a lot of that money is then channeled back into the sport. Elsewhere in the world, it's not like that. And is there anything in particular in France that makes their rugby that strong? Why would they have three leagues of professionals and South Africa clearly nowhere near that?
First of all, Alec, they have a significant population. I mean, you know, it's only really us and England that have populations in the 50 and 60 millions. Everybody else are sitting at 4 or 5 million population that are playing rugby. So the French have. And they've got the economic power, these wealthy franchise owners who just love, many of them are Mavericks, some of them are half batty, but they absolutely love rugby, and that's where they choose to put their money. And they've developed this hugely competitive league, and as I say, with promotion and relegation in three professional leagues. But I can't comment on the horse racing because that's your forte and not mine. But that's eye-opening, you know, that they've chosen to go that route. But I also think, you know, outside of Paris in France, Alec, rugby is the most popular sport. So, of course, football's big, but it's really only big in Paris and, you know, other cities. But you go to Bordeaux, you come to the south, to Montpellier, to Nice, to Toulouse and Toulon and all of those places, and even up, you know, into the, you know, the Champagne Valley. Rugby is the strongest sport there. And they have protected their league to the extent that they will sometimes send almost a second string team to play in those autumn internationals that we've just had. They didn't do it this year. There was a pause. But if the top 14 is going on, the top 14 is priority. And they'll send, a slightly weakened side if that's what it takes, because they protect that product of theirs. And I say good on
them. It's a little bit like...
That's why we need a global rugby season.
Well, yeah. Which we now have. But it's a little bit, I guess, like the English Premiership, where they are the strongest soccer league and they bring in people from all over the world. And the French are showing Beauden Barrett as you mentioned.
And they do it, They've got, you know, all the Argentina professionals, almost all. I mean, you know, let me not say all, but it's the vast majority of players who play for representative rugby for Argentina apply their trade in the top 14 in France, as do the Georgians. All the Tashvilis and Hashvilis, they all play there. And so, exactly like the England Premiership in football.
So I guess it's not surprising that the biggest of the tournaments, this what is now called the Investec Challenge Cup, has been won by more French clubs than than any other parts of the world. Is that also why, when you read the write-ups or the previews, the South Africans are kind of not mentioned? The Sharks, Bulls, and Stormers aren't really tipped to go, certainly not to win it or even to the semifinals.
Well, I think that, and I can't speak to this because I have no information, but I strongly suspect that that's going to become a thrust and a goal of the South African franchises, because we should be. I mean, there's no reason why the Bulls cannot be competing with Toulouse. There's no reason why the Sharks and the Stormers can't be competing with Saracens and Leinster. You know, those are probably the top three clubs in Europe, if you look at it. And you can throw La Rochelle or Toulon in as the fourth one. But those three, Toulouse, Leinster, and Saracens in England are proper rugby sides. And of course we should aspire to be challenging them in the Investec Champions Cup. Absolutely, Alec.
So we've got the kickoff this week, and the Sharks are playing at home against Exeter, which is, I remember Exeter only because that's where the Springboks lost against the Japanese in that horrific result of the World Cup. And how good are Exeter, and what are the chances of the Sharks making a good start in this top league?
No, at home, the Sharks should comfortably beat them. They Exeter are kind of mid-table. They did win the premiership about 3 years ago. Stuart Hogg left Glasgow Warriors and went and played there, for example, was well paid before he became a complete idiot. So yeah, the Sharks should comfortably win there. You know, the Northampton Saints are the defending champions. They're a good outfit, and then you can never discount London Harlequins, as I said, Saracens, and even Bath. Bath with Finn Russell at 10 are competitive. So those would be the top four teams to look out for when our teams play against English clubs. Those four would be tough to beat over there, but that's a challenge that we should step up to.
And the Stormers have also got a home game to start with.
Who are they playing? Can you recall?
I'll get it in a moment. The Bulls are playing overseas in their first game
in France.
Well, in France. Yeah. So we can get. I'll get all of those in just a moment. But
That article that you put out today, I read it this morning before the interview, Alec. That's very good, because whoever wrote that explains very adequately. So if anybody has forgotten some of the stuff that you and I have chatted about, just go and read that article. It explains it beautifully.
Well, I'm going to pick it up as we talk now. But if you were to say, of our three clubs, and we'll talk about Glasgow Warriors in just a moment, but of the Sharks, the Bulls, and the Stormers, which of those three are best positioned to go furthest in this tournament?
I think it's a toss-up between the Sharks and the Bulls, Alec. And again, it all depends on how the coaches choose to use their depth. So when Glasgow Warriors played and lost to the Sharks, although we got two losing bonus points, we got we scored four tries against the Sharks, but they had about 148 Springboks in their team that day. If you send that team overseas, they should be, you know, they should beat any of those those European clubs, both the French and the English, as well as the Scots, Welsh, Irish, and Italian teams. They should be competitive. But coaches choose not to do that because of the attrition. Like we saw, the Bulls got into the final because they went and beat Leinster last year in the semi-final. And Leinster have twice stumbled at that hurdle where they've sent a second-string team and lost. So it's a long-winded answer, but it depends how the coaches deploy their manpower. Yeah. But those two would be the pick, I'd think. Stormers are struggling, and that's concerning because, you know, if I'm not a Glasgow Warriors fan, I'm a Stormers fan, so they must shake up and wake up down there.
They were very stiff on the weekend. They were poor. But
they
were stiff. They should have won. That little knock-on right at the end. Man, I suppose that's what makes rugby so exciting. It pretty much anything good. And they're a great team, the Stormers. Their scrum was giving the Sharks all kinds of trouble. And even though the Sharks have, you know, Oxenchair and Trevor Nkabani, I mean, there's some top players there.
It wasn't just Saturday that I'm referring to, Alec. You know, they've had a poor run so far. So I think there's issues there that need to be unpacked, because, you know, the Stormers, they were the first champions. Then they were runners up. Last year, they lost in the quarterfinal. So they should be up there every time, and they're not. You know, the Bulls and the Sharks are the teams that are, you know, who's kind of what's the phrase I'm looking for? They, you know, their moon is on the wane and the Stormers is on the wax. Or the other way around. Yeah.
The Stormers are playing RC Toulon at home.
There you go. So that's the team that beat Glasgow Warriors in the lower of the two European finals last year. So Toulon are really good. That's where Cheslin Kolbe played his rugby before going to Japan. Having moved from Toulouse, he went there. Bucky's Buerta played there. Brian Abana played there. Toulon is a proper side, so they're going to have their hands full.
So yeah. The top side in France is Toulouse, but...
Is Toulouse.
Toulon is close to that.
Toulon and La Rochelle would be the, you know, the next best. But, you know, they've got other great sides. They've still got Lyon and Brive and Bordeaux and Montpellier. They've got proper teams in that country. Yeah.
And do they take this tournament as seriously as their top 14? What is a greater honor to win, the European Cup?
Yes, they
Cup
do. Or? Absolutely, because Toulouse... Well, Toulouse are very quick to tell you. I've got a very good friend. His name is Didier, who lives in Toulouse, and he's a rugby man, you know, to the tips of his toes. And he's very quick to tell you that they have the most number of top 14 championships. They have the stars over their badge and the most number of European Cup wins. It's very important to them because they love, of course, they love beating the English. So to say that we're European champions and we've beaten the top English teams, the French love that.
Well, let's hope that the Sharks put one over the Exeter Chiefs, which seems like it's a likelihood. The Stormers, on the other hand, they might have the going a little tougher against Toulon. And then the Glasgow Warriors are playing the Sale Sharks at home. That's you,
Sale Sharks, yeah. So that's the team that the Dupreer brothers played for. Faf de Klerk played there a couple of seasons ago. Also, they're kind of in that mid-table like the Exeter Chiefs. Yeah, they can produce the goods on their day. Where's that fixture? Are they playing it in England?
No, in Scotland.
At home. Okay, yeah. So they should be okay. But again, you know, if that was, I know that was Franco's focus this year because the fact that Glasgow Warriors won the URC, that means they immediately go into that top tier, but they also qualified to go into the top tier by dint of coming fourth in the league before the playoffs last year. So he knows that depth is a huge thing. And, you know, Scottish rugby is also like the RFU in England has had their numbers not working well for them. You know, their revenue is down, so there's a net loss. So it's a very delicate balance. How do you now balance the payment of your players to retain them? Because as soon as Glasgow won the URC, the offers poured in for all of their top players from all over France and from England to say, we'll have some of those players. Of course, Glasgow don't want that to happen because now they've got to go and defend the title in the URC and they've got to play at the higher level in Europe. So it was a delicate little balance that they did there. And to my knowledge, the only top player that we've lost is Tom Jordan. And I'm really, really sorry, you know, to see him go. He's gone to Bristol Bears in England, but only at the end of this season. So he's still playing for Glasgow now. And we're going to need him because Adam Hastings has broken his jaw in two places on Friday night against the Scarlets. I'm really sorry for that. Adam Hastings, the son of the great Gavin Hastings and nephew of Scott. So we're going to need backup at 10, and Tom Jordan is still here for the year. But what a revelation he was in that final. I mean, he was close to man of the match when Glasgow beat the Bulls at Loftus. He was outstanding in that game and in the previous two. Yeah.
So Glasgow Warriors, they should be strong enough for the Sale Sharks. What about the Bulls? They're away to Saracens.
Tough call. So again, what's Jake going to do? You know, is he going to send the Ulrich Lowes and the Ruan Norkias and, you know, the rest of the of his Springboks, or is he going to hold them back? But that's going to be a tough one. It could go either way. And I would say it's going to depend on which outfit, you know, run onto the field and are on the bench.
But Saracens are a very, very slick team. I actually interviewed the CEO of Saracens when I was in the UK and Mauro Itoje as well, who was... A few years ago, was kind of up and I think he was already playing for England, but What a wonderful human being and what a great player he is. And then
I'm so glad to hear that, because he's always been one of those players that's really irritated me. But he can play. Yeah, I'm so glad to hear that.
Articulate, smart, really lovely. Well, he made a huge impression, a very good impression on me. And then,
glad to hear it, Eddie.
And going to their stadium, and I think this is a very interesting point. It's a little stadium, 11,000, 12,000 people max, whereas the Bulls will be used to 60,000 people. So it might be, how do the players, like Kyle, when they go to these little stadiums, how do they feel relative to playing maybe in the Shark Tank?
You know, Alec, they love it, because you're going to get 12 or 13,000 Saracen fans packed into that. I think it's also called the Allianz Stadium, where they play at home. Scotstoun, which is where Glasgow Warriors play, is only an 8,000-seater stadium, as is the Hive Stadium, which sits alongside Murrayfield's, one of the perimeters that they have there. You know, it's almost like the B field at Loftus sits alongside of them, and it's also only 8,000. So when you've got 8,000 or 12 or 13,000 fans packed in there, you've got a great atmosphere. Whereas you can have 20,000 people rattling around in Loftus or the DHL Stadium, or even fewer at Ellis Park, then there's not that chias in there. So the players love it. And I went there, Kyle and them got a proper smack from Saracens about 3 years ago. We were in the UK, my family, and we went there to watch that. And what is so nice about Saracens is they've got volunteers that welcome you. You are made to feel welcome as a guest, and they'll flash up on the scoreboard, "Please respect the kicker." And it's dead silent when the opposition guy is kicking for poles. And I think that is something, well, I know it's something that our fans in South Africa need to properly step up and learn a lesson. Our behavior is appalling. We boo kickers, and I think that that's not rugby. That should not happen in rugby. In Ireland, it's dead quiet, irrespective of the state of the game. Nobody boos the kicker. If he's kicking to win the game by a point or 2 points, by, you know, kicking that conversion or that penalty, they will respect it. And we need to do the same. Our behavior is shocking.
We've got to stop the Brunnevein and Coke being allowed into the stadium in the first place. Perhaps. Rory, what about, you've mentioned Kyle, your son. Is he over his injury yet?
Yeah, kind of. You know, Alec, such a tragic story, because he was really flying. So after winning the ERC, he came back, scored 3 tries in the first 2 games, got this injury, and they didn't pick up the fracture. They picked up the ligament tear, and they rehabbed that, and then they found the fracture. Then they had to put a plate and 6 screws. Then the stitches, the internal stitches, were rejected by his body, and he's got some nerve issues there. So he's not 100% there yet, which is tragic, because we're all going to Scotland on the 12th of December, and we want to see him play those two derbies. It's a proper derby, Edinburgh, Glasgow. You know, it's the blue-collar workers from Glasgow versus the white-collar Ponzi boys from Edinburgh, and it's a hang of a spectacle. So they've already sold 20,000 tickets for the Glasgow game. It's not at Scotstoun, it's too small. So they've rented Hampden Park, where Scotland play their football internationals. They've already sold 20,000. That'll probably go to 25 or 30, and they'll get 30 or 35,000 in the return fixture in Murrayfield after Christmas. So we want to see him play, man. So yeah. Everybody that makes prayer a practice, get on your knees and pray that this injury will heal. Yeah, but you know, it's professional sport, Alec. It's brutal. You got to take those ups and downs. Yeah.
So what we're going to do with the business community now is we're going to run a fantasy league and a predictor league. You suggested that we run a predictor league in the premium WhatsApp group, and I think we got 15 people who came along. It's been great.
Wasn't
fun.
Enough.
It's been not yeah. enough, but it was great.
Yeah,
fun.
Absolutely.
And what we're going to do is now open this to the whole community. So the whole business community will be able to go on a special rugby WhatsApp group and to participate in this predictor. So I'm going to put you on the spot, because the first game is played on Friday. And just you don't have to, I'm not going to hold you to anything, but just to give us a bit of a guide on these games, starting, this is in the Investec Challenge Cup. I don't think we're going to do both of the tournaments. It's a bit early
no,
for us.
No, so that's the
we'll
top.
We'll just do the big
that
one.
That is the highest level of European rugby with our teams, yeah.
So So it's like the European Cup. And
yes, we, it's like the Champions League.
I was explaining to my wife this morning, to Jeanette, I said it was like Kaiser Chiefs and Orlando Pirates getting invited to play with Real Madrid and Barcelona. It's basically
exactly what it is. In the European Cup. Exactly what it is. Yeah. Yeah.
And off they go. The Sharks, Stormers, and Bulls are going to be playing their first games this weekend. So let's start on Friday night. Bath, you mentioned them a bit earlier, are playing against Stade Rochelais.
And where's that fixture?
At Bath. I'll give you the name okay, of the, so, yeah, the home so, yeah, club do
that.
First.
Okay, so I'm going to say that I'm not going to be that guy that sits on the fence. I'm going to make a pick every time, Alec, but it will. So who the coaches send and, you know, whether they send a second string outfit is going to play a role somewhere. So that notwithstanding, I'm going to make a pick. So Bath against La Rochelle, that's a tough one to call, but I'm going to go with Bath by three.
Okay. The second on the Saturday, we've got a whole day of rugby for those who are couch potatoes. The first game is between Clermont and Benetton.
Clermont will win easily, 15, 18 points, yeah.
And then the Sharks against the Exeter Chiefs?
Sharks at home to Exeter Chiefs, Sharks who should beat them by 10 to 12 points.
Northampton Saints versus the Castres Olympique.
I'll go with Northampton Saints. They are defending champions in the English Premiership, and Castres is not one of the top teams, so I'm going with them by 14 points. Northampton.
Stormers against Northampton.
Yeah.
Okay. So far, it's apart from that Bath-La Rochelle game, it's pretty, well, relatively smooth sailing. But then Stormers-Toulon.
Difficult, because Toulon are blooming good. They're like the second best team in France. But the Stormers need to wake up, and they are playing in front of their home crowd at the DHL. So I'm going to stick my neck out here, Alec, and say the Stormers by 4 points.
Munster and Stade Francais Paris.
Another difficult one, but I'm going to go home ground advantage with Munster by 7.
Saracens Bulls.
Saracens. Saracens by 12.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's presuming that Jake's going to send a B team there.
Well, even if he sends the A team, I think Saracens have got enough firepower. Yeah. I hope he sends the A team, because then it's going to be a proper game.
Is that the way the coaches think sometimes?
Yeah,
they say, well, look, we're not going to beat Saracens at their home.
You see, so in these early rounds, what they should be doing is playing their strongest teams, Alec. It's more to when it comes to the playoffs, when you've got travel involved. Remember, that's how Leinster stumbled. Leinster had to play the Bulls in Pretoria in the first one when the Stormers won it. So Leinster, thinking that they were going to beat the Bulls, sent their second string team here and kept all their Irish internationals there, and they lost. And the Bulls and the Stormers played the final, and the Stormers won it in Cape Town. So that's where it normally comes, when the traveling, but it also depends on the subsequent fixtures. So the Bulls are going now to play the Saracens. Who do they play next? Because they won't only go for one game, they'll go for two or three, again, because of the travel. So what are the subsequent fixtures? But I would think, if I were Jake White, I would put my strongest side in against the Saracens, because Saracens are good. They would be, as I said, one of the top three or four clubs in Europe. So I really hope that Jake does that, Alec.
Well, you've only really got to win, be one of the top eight in your...
Yeah, and you've got to win your home games.
It's group, because only
nothing changes there. You've got to win your home games. Yeah.
So it sounds to me like there's a lot of strategy that goes into this as well. We've got to watch.
Correct. And later, that's why it's sometimes so difficult to call. Yeah.
Later in the week, we've got to watch and see exactly who's being picked. And is it the strongest team, or are they giving this one a pass? A little bit like...
Yeah, so I'm not going to make my predictions until I see the team sheets.
No, well, we'll know. Yeah. we'll know, because you'll put them on the WhatsApp channel, no doubt. Glasgow that's Warriors, right. Sale Sharks?
Glasgow Warriors, I'm going with my boys here. It'll be competitive, and my word, the Scarlets were competitive on Friday night. Glasgow only beat them by 2, no bonus points. So they will step up now, because I think that's a wake-up call. It was a very young Glasgow team. They'll put all their internationals back, the guys that were rested after the Scotland Autumn Series. So you get the Ferguson brothers back, you know, you get the Tui Palotos back. So I'm going to go Glasgow by 10 points there.
And then is it called Racing 92? Racing 92. Versus Harlequins.
In Paris? So Racing is the team that Theo went to, and they've got the batty president, you know. Racing versus Harlequins. Yeah, I'm going to go Racing. Hey, Alec, 8 points.
Sure, that's quite a comfortable victory. What happened with Sia? Does anybody know?
I don't. I haven't heard the rumors. I think that personally, I was delighted that he came back because I think we need him. He's a South African icon. I don't think we understand how much he means to our country. I mean, the Springboks are the embodiment of excellence and everything good that South Africa can be, Alec. And we need him here. I know that he was looking to get away from the pressure because, I mean, we've seen so sad to learn about the dissolution of their marriage. That's terrible news. And I think a large part of that was the pressure that guy is under. I saw him when he came to the final of the Women's World Cup earlier last year. In fact, he was at the semi-final when we beat England at Newlands and then we lost to Australia, our women, this is. And he came there as like an ambassador for, and also he's very strong on, you know, we must support our women's teams. The guy, it's like Sachin Tendulkar in India. He can't move, Alec. So there was, I think he needed a bit of a break and then went there and found, you know what? I need to be with my people. I hope that that's the case. And then, you know, SA Rugby had to put a decent chunk of change in to buy him out of that, that contract. And bring him back to the Sharks. So I'm glad he's back. Yeah, I really wish he had stayed at the Stormers. I don't know what he's doing there in Durban. It's not his place. He should be in Cape Town.
He but is be playing,
that
as it
may. That'll get the Sharks supporters.
He's playing fantastic rugby at number 8.
Zipo Buthelezi and company.
Yeah, he really is playing wonderful rugby.
I think he's in the form of his life.
Yeah,
I don't think I've seen Sia play better.
But you wonder why Rossi isn't using him at number 8. Anyway, let's not get into that. We're talking about the final three, and we've got Union Bordeaux versus Leicester Tigers. Yeah. Now, Leicester Tigers, if I remember correctly, that's where Pollard is playing.
Pollard plays, yeah. So that's going to be another close one, and Leicester Tigers could actually pull that off in Bordeaux, but I'm going to go with Bordeaux by 5 points there. Yeah, so they're a close one that day.
They're a top team then, obviously, Bordeaux.
Yeah. Now they're a good side. And as you know, one of the most beautiful parts of France. Yeah. They make decent wine there.
Almost like the Himalayan Arda Valley in the Western
Cape. Almost like Stellenbosch in France. Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. Stade Toulouse versus Ulster.
Yeah. Oh no, Toulouse. Toulouse by 20.
Sure. And yep. Bristol Bears versus Leinster?
Bristol Bears is where Tom Jordan is going to from Glasgow next season. But I'm going to go with the away team and say Leinster are going to have too much firepower. Of course, I would qualify that by saying if Leinster take all their Irish internationals, because Leinster is Ireland, they should beat Bristol Bears. Yeah. So I'm going to go Leinster by 13 points.
If Leinster is Ireland, and Sharks is Springboks to a large degree.
Springboks, exactly.
That's going to be a heck of a game. But then, is there an equivalent?
Those will be.
Is there an equivalent in the other countries?
All of those games, actually, Alec, are going to be good to watch. Yeah, that's good rugby coming up there for the next 3 weeks. Yeah.
Well, we've focused on rugby a lot in this week's conversation, but you've been elected onto the board of Comrades. And sure, Rory, I was amazed at how much interest there was when Comrades went through all of its troubles. We've got about 10 minutes left today. Can you just explain how you got involved in standing for election on the board, how the election went, and what it means?
Certainly. So initially, well, what I did was last year, when Rowan James was no longer the race organizing manager. A couple of us, you know, that are involved in sport were chatting, and it came to my knowledge that one of the problems was that there was a security issue, a personal safety issue to runners towards the end of the event. And that what could have been one of the reasons why there was that absolute debacle with the final cutoff. Do you remember the final cutoff in the year before last? there were none of those scenes of the yes. final gun mm. being shot because there was nobody in the home straight because they'd cut them all off at the final cutoff 5Ks outside the stadium. It was terrible.
Okay.
And one of the reasons being bandied about was the safety of the roads because it's getting dark and everyone's tired. The police are tired. The private security are tired. It's a long day. And I just thought, you know what, with all of my sports security experience, I can actually add value here. And I didn't know whether that was right or wrong. So I called up Anne Ashworth, who'd been appointed to replace Rowan James as essentially the race director, because I know her husband. He and I used to run in the same training group, although he was light years ahead of me. I hardly ever saw him. You know, when the run started, off went Dave Ashworth, and I saw him at the end when we got back to our cars. So I said, listen, I'll put my hand up. I don't want a cent. I'll volunteer my time and my expertise. I'd like to see if I can add value to this whole thing. And so I volunteered. Then I saw, because I flew down and attended one of the event safety and security planning committees together with Anne. And then I saw that she was it's hard to describe. She was a bag of nerves. Alex, she was in a bad way because of the way that she was being abused by certain members on this board. You know, she'd uncovered a whole bunch of malfeasance and they were going after her. We saw the Vanilla Gate, WhatsApp and all of this. And this poor lady was victimized in numerous ways to a significant degree. And so following that, people like me who are green number runners who are really concerned that this stuff is going on within the board of the Comrades really took that quite personally. And as I said in my first interview with you on this matter, Alec, prior to the special general meeting, I said, you know, we have to hold our hands up and say we were asleep at the wheel. Mm. We as the members of the CMA were not paying sufficient attention to who was elected to the board.
Rory?
Because the board are there to protect the race. Yeah.
Green numbers?
Green numbers are those people who've run at least 10 okay. comrades. There's three ways to get a green number. And Fordyce is always quick to point this out because he's got it all three ways. You can get a green number by winning comrades three times or winning five gold medals, which is position 1 to 10, or finishing 10 comrades. So the weekend warriors like me has got absolutely zero chance of winning it. The only way I can get a green number is by completing 10. Then, and that's a big deal, Alec, because your number is then retired. My number is 42743. Nobody will ever run the Comrades Marathon in number 42743 unless I bequeath it to one of my children.
Wow.
That's the only way. Mm. So when you cross the line, because when you run your 10th Comrades, you run with a yellow number. And everybody's wishing you and patting you on the back and saying, hey, well done, man, all the best. Nobody says well done until you've crossed the line. They always say good luck for or all the best for your 10th.
Just like
when you cross the line, there's volunteers. They're looking out for those yellow numbers. They pull you aside. There's a booth there with a backdrop. There's a legend. Like in my case, it was Jackie Meckler who won 5 comrades. He's standing there with my number on it's embroidered onto a green felt baize cloth in gold lettering, and he hands it over to you and they take photos, and it's something. You know, you've been awarded a comrade's green number. It's a big deal.
Lots of tradition.
And
lots of tradition.
But yeah, I've run a marathon on 7 continents, including Antarctica, and that is not as impressive to me as my green number. So the green numbers, a few of us started to chat, you know, amongst ourselves and said, listen, we've got to do something. And two or three of those guys approached me and said, Rory, if it comes to, you know, voting in a new board, would you be prepared to stand, to make yourself available? And I said, you know what, guys, actually, you know, where things are in my life at the moment, I actually do have a little bit of time, because normally it's a time thing. You know, you need to be able to dedicate yourself to that. So I said, yeah, okay, I'll throw my hat in the ring. And then we formed this body, non-affiliated to anything, just we called ourselves the Comrades Collective, because there was common purpose in that everybody there was really concerned that the oversight and the direction and strategy and, you know, right at the top of our event cannot be hijacked by people who are there to serve themselves. I mean, board members going to comrades' house, helping themselves to free liquor from the bar, taking it home. When there's a function, they pitch up there, take food and take it home. What is that? How does a board member behave like that? You know, apart from the fact that, you know, all of the other stuff that was going on, community marshals that were paid a stipend to work on the day to keep the runners safe on desolate parts of the road. And there were questions asked about, you know, the number of pay packets that were issued to the number of marshals that were actually paid. Where did the money go? Why was it in cash? Why didn't we do e-walleting? And when Anne suggested that, you know, financial controls are put in place there, you know, she was attacked and vilified. So we can't have that kind of behavior going on at board level of the comrades. So I put my hand up and, you know, Saturday was a marathon, pun intended, because I logged onto the AGM before 10 o'clock, I think at about 9:30, and I logged off at about 10 to 6 that night.
Wow.
So I did about 8.5 hours, which would have earned me a Bill Rowan medal, as the running man was saying. There was a journalist called Stuart Mann, who's known as the running man, and he was doing almost ball-by-ball commentary for those who couldn't log in, because you could only log in if you were a member in good standing. So for those who couldn't and were still interested, he was putting out this 8.5-hour-long ball-by-ball commentary on his website, and he was using the cut-off guns of the comrades to indicate the length of the AGM, and it was crazy. It was long but necessary. We got certain important constitutional changes, amendments made. They carried. Some of them didn't carry. Not all of them. It wasn't unanimous. But we got a board elected, and all seven of the vacant, so there are two incumbents that remain on the board, and there are seven new board positions, and all seven of those came from that comrades collective. So just like we say that the electorate of South Africa were heard, you know, the electorate went to the polls, and the two major parties in our country heard the electorate. And so the government of national unity is holding strong for now, and I hope it continues to hold strong. So the membership of the Comrades Marathon Association have spoken, and they've said, we don't want that kind of malfeasance. We don't want corruption. We want competence. We want to professionalize the race. We want to take it into a new era, because in 2 years' time, 2027, we will host the 100th running of the Comrades. So next, the next one, the one that we're planning for now, Alec, 2025, is the test event for that, because, you know, the direction alternates every year. So we only get one shot at practicing the 100th one, and it's this year in 2025, and we are way on the back foot. We've only just been elected. We're 2 days into being a new board. We meet for the first time tomorrow, and we've got to then get a briefing from the acting race organizing organization manager, so he can brief us on where we are, so we can start giving direction to next year's comrades. But I am so thankful for the people that have been elected, those that stood up and were counted, were criticized. We've got the right people in place now, and I believe that the future of this extraordinary event, global iconic event, the greatest ultra marathon in the world, you know, its hashtag is the ultimate human race, and it is every bit that. It is the ultimate human race, and it's a wonderful day to be a South African. Just like the Springboks are, the kind of like the benchmark of excellence, so that whole day is. It's a great day to be a South African. Every color, tribe, LFM, age, gender, weight, size, height, religion, and, you know, language, they're all there together, all encouraging one another. It's just a glorious thing to be a part of.
Rory Steyn giving us his insights, rugby buff, comrades, marathon board member, and an insightful South African on top of it, and of course a proud member of the BizNews tribe. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com. Look forward to the next time. Thank you, Rory.